Golden Knights having great success so far this year. Does that put any pressure on you guys to succeed?
Who are the Golden Knights? only pressure is that the sniping of people saying you got to do as good as them.
It's just good. Vegas is treating us well, and I think the record doesn't show how hard that we work, and it's tough in that way, but it's good for us in the inner circle to understand what we have going on in Vegas, and if we just continue to trust and believe in each other, the sky's the limit for this team, and I'm blessed to be a part of it.
Our expectations maybe at the start of the season were a little unrealistic.
Man, we're not even worried about the playoffs right now. What we do is we take it week by week. We gotta worry about next week. You start looking ahead and you start looking over people, you might not even make it. So
that being said, to me, Urban Meyer is one of the lowest pieces of garbage there is on this earth.
You are tuned in to Straight Bet Sports live on the Gorilla Cross Radio Network.
It is the final day of August as we roll into the fall. It is Straight Bet Sports coming your way here on the Gorilla Cross Radio Network. You can follow them at Gorilla Cross. Also go to GorillaCross.com for all kinds of top-notch content across the board. Jose V, the host of the show, not here today. Jose off today, but never fear. We still have it covered across the board. My name's Chris Wynn. I'll be in here along with our esteemed co-hosts today, as Ian Bradford joins us live, as he does every show, every Wednesday. And Brett Lawson also joining us here live in studio as well. You want to know anything about all things combat sports, whether it's football, the gridiron, he's got it covered as well, too. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And by the way, guys, a lot going on. We think it's, the dog days of summer.
Not so much anymore.
Not so much, nope. Right? Because we have WNBA action here in Vegas. You've got game two of the WNBA semifinals going down tonight at Michelob Ultra Arena as the Las Vegas Aces are hosting the Seattle Storm. A little bit of a surprise on Sunday in game one as Seattle was able to get it done behind Breanna Stewart and Jewel Lloyd having big-time games. They got game one, so they put basically Vegas in a must-win situation tonight. So we're going to jump into that at the top of the show. But, Ian, all kinds of topics as we cut down to the final 53 in NFL on Tuesday, which was yesterday, of course, and some storylines absolutely that we can break down when it comes to the National Football League.
Absolutely. Big names that were cut and released, picked up elsewhere. But before we get into that, let's talk about the Las Vegas Aces a little bit, right? Yes. So they have their game tonight, 7 p.m. You mentioned it, Michelob Ultra Arena. They lost 76-73, right? So, like, what do they have to do to not only win this series, but win tonight? Because, like you said, it is a must win. So, do these girls get it done, or are they going to struggle against the Storm again? What do you think, Lawson?
Well, before we went live, Chris had the ultimate hot take before. We talk talk radio and podcasts.
We can put it back out there.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. We say save it for the show, and that's what I'm saying. Maybe I should segue into what he has to say, tee it up for him, and then he can come with the boom, or should we just start out with the boom? Either way.
Either one.
Make Chris, it quick.
Or we can start out with your take. On what went down on Sunday, and what you think would happen moving
forward.
Simply
put, it's kind of like what we were talking about off air. The productivity of Seattle's backcourt compared to the lack there of Vegas. That needs to return tonight, and if it doesn't, then I think not only are they, it's a must win, quite frankly, the series is over at that point, because it's reflective of what will happen. Even if they do get one more win in there, I think it goes to show that Seattle has the upper hand on the most important aspect of what has gotten Vegas so far, in the past couple of years, the strength of that backcourt. And I know Wilson winning Defensive Player of the Year is a big deal and all that, and I know obviously there's certain things that they bring to the table, especially this year compared to prior years, that may have a lot of people kind of just bullish on them, and they have been all year long. But now that the lights are on bright and we're in this playoff atmosphere, even with the emotional like overtones of Sue Bird and everything like that, just everything surrounding this WNBA season, it just kind of seems like this is a spotlight where Vegas's stars need to score, and we need to see that early on tonight. If it doesn't happen, they're in a tough spot, and I think that is the simple way to look at it, but it's the do or die way as well.
So if I'm Becky, I would definitely hit home with the fact that last year we've been here, we've been here before.
This
we've
isn't
been
a stage
in the
we
semifinals,
don't know. Yeah,
and last year we lost, right? So that bitter defeat, I am hoping that it kind of spurs that energy that we need from them, especially the starters tonight. And it was a very close game, right? Defensively, they actually played pretty well. They just need to be a little bit more aggressive, I feel, on offense. And if they can do that tonight, then I think that not only are they going to win, like, win tonight, but I do think that they win this series. I think that it might have been a little bit of nerves. It might have been a little bit of emotions of last year, yep. especially mm-hmm. with a lot of these stars that are returning from last year's team. And I think that if Becky comes in and she really hammers home that we have to get it done. Like, there's no going.
No, there's back no. There's no
here.
Tomorrow. Even there, if there, there technically
I mean,
is another
there
game.
There is yeah, another game, but
we can't afford that mentality
you
right
can't
now.
Go down 0-2 no. on a team like Seattle Storm because they will make you pay.
Yep.
So and I think Kelsey Plum has an excellent night. I think Jackie mm-hmm. and Asia just go crazy, and I wouldn't be surprised if tonight's a statement win.
Yeah, and if Stewart and Jewel get going again, that is obviously kind of gives you an idea that they're not ready for what they bring to the table. So we can focus as much as we want to on the offensive aspects of the Aces. I think Kelsey gets it going tonight as well. We talked about right before we went live how the shooting just wasn't there. If it's there tonight, completely different story. Yep. That's a case, though, for a lot of ball clubs in the NBA, WNBA, college
right?
hoops. That's just basketball in general. So if that happens, it's obviously going to be a different game. But what I want to know is, will Jewel have the same type of performance? Will we see that from Brianna again? Like, if that happens again, then you're thinking, oh, no, because now we can, even if we counterpunch, can we take that kind of punishment and stay on the ropes?
Okay, Ian. Okay, Brett. Here goes the little devil's advocate yeah. action from yep. C-Win over
Heat
here.
It up. Heat it up,
A couple
Chris.
Of points from Sunday, right? Unbelievable crowd. Great atmosphere there. Look, the WNBA, let's be straight up and honest about it. You don't get a lot of 10,000-plus crowds
no,
in a lot
big.
Of those arenas. That was a tremendous atmosphere down at the Michelob Ultra Arena on Sunday, and that's something that they've been able to duplicate numerous times here during the season. Now, back to this matchup between Seattle and Vegas. What do we talk about, guys, a lot when you talk about the NBA, college basketball, basketball period? Matchups, right?
Yep.
Matchups are so important. And this is a difficult matchup
it is.
For the Las Vegas Aces against the Seattle Storm. And you have Jewel Lloyd. Yeah, you guys touched on it. Jewel Lloyd had a big-time game on Sunday. You obviously saw what Brianna Stewart does day in, night out
yeah.
for that Seattle Storm team. And so I have some real questions as to whether or not, even if there are adjustments made, and look, I think Becky Hammon is absolutely one of the best coaches in the WNBA and is capable of getting this team to make some adjustments and
yeah.
And kind of right the ship here in game two. I just don't think it's going to be as easy as expected. Now, look, without question, in that game on Sunday, Asia Wilson was not as dominant
yeah.
and as much of a force as she needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be in a position where you have one of your stars, your marquee MVP caliber player,
right.
who's taking 10 or less shots in a game. Just can't happen. They have to find a way to get her free. They got to find a way to get her be more instrumental offensively. If they're going to win this game tonight, that is another big key. Jackie Young, and you talked about
yeah.
the accolades that this team has received, right? Jackie
yes.
Young, comeback player of the year in the WNBA this
yeah,
year.
Most improved.
Most improved. So she has also been someone who's been a huge key all season long. I think she needs to kind of flex her muscles a little bit also offensively and have possibly, you know, like an 18-8 game. She's got to be in
yeah.
that in that kind of numbers realm as well, too, for Vegas to have success. So I don't think there's any question. I think this is a good thing that they do have this kind of backs against the wall mentality
yeah.
going into game two. And I think it's going to be great that you're going to have the backing of your home crowd here in Vegas. But make no mistake about it. If they lose this game tonight, it's in the end-all be-all. They're done.
And
so you have to – they have to come out and execute. And to Ian's point earlier – Asia Wilson, and to my point also, Asia Wilson's got to be a huge factor.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they are in deep trouble.
And that's why, like, if it's a, what, not to cut you off, Ian, but it's like the classic, you know, analogy in combat sports, styles make fights. It's the
right.
same exact thing, because if we see something similar to what we saw a couple of nights ago, then it's no longer, sure, the emotional aspects
yeah.
have a lot to do with it. You know, maybe it's the nerves or the jitters, them overthinking it, the fact that Seattle just came out and hit them in the mouth. Then it's not so much that as the fact that Seattle is just a bad matchup for Vegas. And if that's really, I think, what we'll find out through when the clock hits all zeros tonight.
And one more quick point too, Ian, to use a Vegas term, Seattle's playing with house money. They
oh,
came
yeah.
in here,
yeah.
you're looking to get a split, right?
Easy.
And we in the post-game press conference on Sunday, the coach talked about this, how, look, we were, obviously we want to win every single game, but she was absolutely, she had, you could tell she was happy that they took game one because they were going to get at least a split. So they are absolutely, I mean, they can play free. They can just play, you know, I'm not saying they're going to be in a position to give the game away or anything like that. Yeah. But they're not going to be on, they're not going to be tight. I don't think Seattle should be, and no. they don't have any reason to be tight.
They don't have
to go out there and just play their game and see where the chips may fall. And that could also be something that could be detrimental to Vegas. Yep.
They don't have that desperation that Vegas has, and that sometimes makes or breaks this entire series.
I think the big thing is they just have to cancel out the outside noise, especially with, I don't know why they do it here now, but you know they released this last week, the WNBA Coach of the Year, which is Becky Hammon, the Most Improved Player, which is Jackie Young, and the Defensive Player of the Year.
Just last night,
which is Asia Wilson. You just got to have to cancel that out. Accolades are great, but it's a team sport, so you have to actually just buckle down and do your job. So I think they get it done. I think that they cancel out outside noise. Becky handles that group, and on to the next one, right? So big news coming out of San Francisco, right? Jimmy G is going nowhere, right? They restructured his deal, saving about, I think it is like $15, $16 million of cap space. They're lowering it down to a 6.5 guaranteed base salary. This deal, is it more of an indictment of the 49ers' belief of Trey Lance's progress that he's done this offseason? Or is it more of, we like Jimmy, he's a solid backup, this will just make it easier for him to trade?
I think they kind of lucked into a situation where it's the former, just because now, if it's essentially what they probably wanted to do last year, because there's so much to hype around Trey Lance coming out in the draft, but obviously he didn't show great signs early on. And with Garoppolo there, the next thing you know, they did a couple of huge wins. They have the upper hand on the Rams. Big win in Dallas. Great NFC Championship game, which ultimately ends with, you know, Garoppolo off of Garoppolo's arm. And that kind of, you know, in a way, sealed his fate. In a way, everyone watching on their couches thought, and enter Trey Lance. And that's essentially what it was. They made their intentions clear earlier in the summer that he was going to be their guy and that Garoppolo was basically not needed during the festivities. But now it's a situation where they could revert back to last year if Lance struggles. In terms of why Garoppolo didn't land anywhere, that was interesting, especially given what happened with Cleveland. I know there was a lot of people, like, because, you know, Brissett, it's a hard gamble. I like Jacoby.
He doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Exactly, he's very conservative.
Yeah, but how much are you, and how much are you going to really excel with him, at least compared to Garoppolo? And there were several other teams as well. There was a lot of talk when you know, Seattle, San Francisco dare even keep him in their backyard, him go help out the Seattle quarterback situation, which is looking abysmal right now. But in a way, no one bit on that. And I don't know if that is really more of a reflection of where Garoppolo is on the market right now, or more of those situations kind of solidifying themselves at this point in the offseason heading into the preseason heading into the regular season. But Chris,
I want to hear your take before I go.
So much conversation surrounding Garoppolo's skill set and all that, but do you think Lance is going to be the guy to begin with? Because even before we knew Garoppolo was going to get this deal, the bigger question to me is ultimately, is moving forward with Lance something they plan to do early on anyway? Is that the right move from the get-go? I think it is, in terms of on paper, that's usually what you do, but is Lance ready?
I do think Lance has a chance to be special. Mm-hmm. Now, I look at this scenario and situation in a couple different ways, right? I look at it in this way. Best case scenario, right? You drafted Trey Lance in the top five. You're the San Francisco 49ers. You're a team that has Super Bowl caliber talent. You have a team right now that they're not wallowing in mediocrity. No. They're not a bottom half of the league team. This is a team that could win a Super Bowl. This is a team interception away last year of going to the Super Bowl. So this is a squad, all right, that and somebody's sweating a little bit here in studio. Yeah. But the point being is that, you know, best case scenario, he performs like a top five guy that you expected, right? When he gets, and he does it fairly soon. Okay, mm-hmm. that's the best case scenario for San Francisco. I also look at it this way. The Niners want their cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
All right? Because they're essentially restructuring this deal, keeping Jimmy G in San Francisco. Let me tell you something, guys, and you can disagree with me if you want. Jimmy G is a top 32 quarterback in this league.
Yeah.
Jimmy G could be a starter in this league. Essentially, the San Francisco 49ers have a backup plan, an insurance policy with a guy that is one of the quarterback that should be starting in the league.
And right?
Now, look, I understand you know, you want to be the nice guy, or you want to portray that. I got to believe his stomach is churning right now because he knows that he should be a guy that every Sunday should be out there and should be the number one QB1 out there for a team. So to me, I kind of have a little bit of an issue with that. But San Francisco, hey, I mean, they want their cake and eat it too. They're going to get it. So
it's kind of like how Mayfield was in limbo, and you were wondering if Cleveland was trying to do the same thing with the Watson situation when that was up in the air before we knew that for the first six games initially.
Yeah.
But by then, Baker was gone. But early in the offseason, we were all like, what the hell's going to happen here?
Here's what also going to be problematic. I'm sure we're going to be bouncing this around all season, especially early on in the season. What happens if Trey Lance goes out there and isn't spectacular, right? What if he goes out there week three, week four, week five, and they're at a point where they are, you know, not exactly, you know, ripping things up offensively? And what happens when the guys in the locker room, that guys in that locker room, think to themselves, you know what, would it be better if Jimmy G was out there? Would we have a better chance to, you know, place ourselves in a better spot playoff wise or have a better chance to win a Super Bowl if our guy that's the backup was actually starting? If you get some of that stuff going on in the locker room, that is ultra problematic.
Right. Nick Bosa and Deebo Samuel played in a Super Bowl with the man.
Jimmy G's played in big spots. Jimmy G is already in his career. Look, I'm not trying to say Jimmy G's a top five quarterback in the league, but the guy has been in big games, and he has been able to perform at the NFL level. So, Ian, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this, but I mean, let me tell you something. It's a we want our cake and eat it too type of deal for the
Niners,
in my opinion.
Absolutely. So, this is my big thing with it, right? Alex Smith, when Patrick Mahomes was there, gone.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, it took a while, but once he was ready, gone.
Yep.
Right? You let your veterans go when you have a successor, right? This is absolutely, I want my cake and eat it too, but you don't also restructure a deal this late in the preseason, in the offseason, unless you have some concerns about your starting quarterback. Because you're right, it does create kind of like a push-pull, and it's not necessarily bad for the team because, you know, I'm an Eagles fan, right? And you kind of had the same kind of dynamic with Nick Foles and Carson Wentz, right? Yeah. They were building shrines for Nick Foles during that Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
It didn't necessarily, it wasn't bad for the team. They rallied around Nick Foles and they ended up winning the Super Bowl. So it can be good for the team.
What if it happens to be the best security policy ever?
Exactly.
Yeah, right?
I'm not against having a quality starter backup quarterback. Not at all. However, it is detrimental to the progress of the rookie or the newcomer, per se, because now him gathering that support in the locker room becomes a lot harder. Because they say, man, you're missing all these wide open throws, man. Jimmy G was hitting me in stride, you know, and not all the time, but like
guys talk.
Guys talk, right? They're going to be, if they start losing games, there are going to be those conversations outside of the locker room with locker room guys that are like, hey, man, you think Jimmy would have won us? Like,
no doubt. It's going to happen.
You think he would have gotten us, you know, past them? We only lost by like 3 points.
Right.
You think
he could be the difference. That? You don't know.
I mean, Deebo might be like, bro, like this guy threw 3 yards behind me. It was picked off. Like, Jimmy hit me in stride all day. He is the Aaron Man Keem. Like, you never know.
And even if Lance succeeds early on, at one point, the rookie wall will be there, or at least some kind of game, even great rookie seasons. You know, that the whole script has kind of been flipped in recent years, obviously, with all the great quarterback performances, obviously, with Herbert and even Burrow before the injury. Yeah. Like, the 2020 class, like, really just kind of flipped up everything. And even 2018, it took a couple of years, but now we see Lamar and Josh Allen in the upper echelon. But for the longest time, it was the clipboard, wear the hat on the sideline type of mentality, and then you get in when you get in. And then we've reverted so much to the way it is now. It's almost like we need to find like the right balance, because in some situations, it's like what you said, maybe it's sometimes detrimental. And at one point, that rookie, even if he performs well early on, it's going to be erratic. There will be a tough spot. And early on, the local media will be all over it. The locker room, there will at least be rumors if they'll be all over it.
Now, he does have the benefit. It'll be a conversation. 49ers media is tough, but it's not New York.
No, it's not
Philly. So he does have the benefit that they are a little bit
lenient.
Yeah, lenient. Mm-hmm. They'll baby him a little bit, right?
At least, yeah.
But not only do you have to worry about the locker room, guys, this is a offense primarily built around Jimmy G. So if Trey Lance is also not delivering the schemes correctly, and reading the plays the way that Kyle Shanahan intends it, he might lean back towards his old friend a little bit, because that's his guy, right? The GM is the one that picked Trey Lance, and they all kind of look at his potential, but is he there yet?
Yeah.
So, and like you said, if he's a bust, like if he's bad this year, like bad, bad, like where you're like, is he even a starting quarterback in this league?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you keep Jimmy? Like, do you then sign a new contract and then just those all those first round picks that you gave up for Trey Lance kind of just go in the garbage? Or what do you do at that point? Because they gave up a fortune for Trey Lance. Well, we'll see.
Hey, there is a long line, guys, of quarterbacks that had big time hype, that had expectations, drafted in the top five, and did not pan out. So it's not like it'd be just unbelievable if Trey Lance was one of those guys.
And but
as where we sit right now, before the season's even started, the expectation is positivity, right? You're thinking absolutely. About this whole idea, and this is another take I think that I find ridiculous. People go out there and they say, well, the Niners will look smart because what if Trey Lance gets hurt? No one ever plans on your star quarterback.
Let me tell you something.
And by the way, also, Brent, how about this? Yeah. How about this? There are a ton of teams throughout the years that had a stud quarterback that you don't go into the season saying, oh, my God, what if that guy got hurt? Because if he did, they'd be screwed.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom Brady with the Patriots for a number of years. I mean, if he gets hurt, they're done, right? Donovan McNabb, when he was in Philadelphia, I don't know who the backup was, but Donovan McNabb was a quarterback in Philly. But and it goes down the
Kelvin
board.
Cobb.
Like Jim Sorgi in Indianapolis.
Exactly.
Like,
my point being, though, is that the Niners, I mean, they're kind of in a unique situation here where you're going into the season, somehow keeping Jimmy G happy as a backup, that is a guy who could absolutely step in, and you can make an honest argument that he is a better option than the starter going into the season.
Yeah.
You don't have that. How many times in a situation in the NFL have you had that? Yeah. I can't remember one.
It definitely feels like the organization is keeping training wheels on Trey Lance, and I don't particularly like it. I think that you just kind of have to, at this point, second year starter, he sat behind a full year. People are trying to say, oh, he's a rookie. No, he's not. He's sat behind him an entire year.
It's like Tagovailoa in Miami. It's the same type of thing. Like, you just got to rip the Band-Aid eventually, and now they're finally going to do it. San Francisco seems intent on doing the same thing.
Usually it takes about 3 years for a starter to just, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes.
They're exceptions to the rule.
Exactly. It takes about 3-4 years for you to fully know what you have as a quarterback, especially these young talents. So, to me, like, it's just training wheels. I don't like it. They should just rip off the Band-Aid, trade Jimmy G, release him. There's a lot of things they could do.
Make your move.
49ers win the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter who's quarterback.
Okay.
And that's what's so funny.
Bottom lining it for all of us.
And the funny thing is, the roster on paper is easily good enough to do so, without question.
Oh, no doubt. Personnel-wise, they're
right
there.
Unit by unit, their pieces are solid.
We'll talk about the division. The division looks pretty tough, too. But they are absolutely one of the teams in the mix. Absolutely. They could win the NFC. I wouldn't be shocked by that at all. A team that is going to be battling the AFC, though, Ian, and that had a cut of a top 20 player yesterday resides right here in the city of Las Vegas, my friend.
So, with the Raiders, they just cut Alex Leatherwood, right? He is the 2021... 17th overall pick in the 2021 draft.
Yes.
This is the state of and I'm going to read this off. Sorry for that. But this is the state of their first round picks from 2019 to 2021.
This is going to be ugly, folks. Yeah.
Very ugly. So defensive end Clelin Ferrell, he's gone.
Yeah.
Running back Josh Jacobs and Abrams, both fifth-year options have been declined for 2020, so they're not bringing them back, or they are.
They're on the fence.
And they're on the fence. They're trying to see. It's a make-or-break year for them.
Mm-hmm.
2020, Henry Ruggs, as we all know, you know, he'd been great if he just didn't drink. And then you have CB Damon Arment, who he likes to threaten fans on Instagram.
Would be great if he put the phone down.
Exactly. Both waived off-field incidents in 2021, and then now Alex Leatherwood. Massive, colossal failure by Mayock and Gruden. My question is, has there ever been, we won't say ever been, in modern-day sports, is that the worst GM-coach tandem that has existed? Because it seems like not only from a draft pick perspective, they failed. But they failed all around. They failed in expectations. They failed in their locker room. They failed in the standard that they tried to upheld in a very hypocritical way.
Matt Millen and Mike Martz, anybody? And that's not even a dig. Chris would probably agree with that.
But they're right there on par with those guys.
Yeah, they're up there.
It's still the Lions, though, from the mid-2000s, a team that ended up going 0-16, and it was just, it was flat-out brutal. But
even some of these Dan Snyder teams.
This whole thing regarding Leatherwood, and by the way, what Ian just pointed out as far as the draft picks in that, you know what this is all about? This is all about a transition, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's a transition from the Mayock Gruden era, which was, as you just pointed out, was awful.
Yes.
And I think John Gruden's one of the more overrated coaches in the history of sports, not just the NFL. He won a Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's players.
By the way,
that goes unsaid.
Then he gets $10 million a year to come to Vegas and go to Oakland and then come to Vegas as a head coach. And
10-year, $100 million.
The guy had been out of coaching for a while. He'd been up in the TV booth for a while. I mean, the whole thing was preposterous. And I think it's kind of an indictment of Mark Davis. But I digress. Going back, it is a transition. It is now a transition to the Patriot 2. Okay. You got the general manager now and the head coach coming in and basically saying we're doing it our way and we're going to get rid of all the nonsense that was going on beforehand. I'm using a little bit of colorful language here that they wouldn't use and because they would take a higher road, but it is absolutely a transition into a new era, and they're trying to go about it their way and do things that they believe are the best way to do it for the organization.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's a transition. I think that they're just trying to get rid of all the bad juju that came with Mayock and Gruden. Gruden, and by the way, is saying that he hopes that one day he can have another chance.
Breaking news last night, essentially, guys, regarding John Gruden. There wasn't a lot of ownership of what went on by John as far as his comments.
Yeah.
And then
You
guys know you guys know the deal. It was all over sports media yesterday. Talks about whether or not he deserves another shot as a coach, whether or not he actually does feel like he's sorry for what transpired. He made comments like, he wasn't he felt bad that the emails came to light, essentially. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily an apology by him.
He basically got mad.
As opposed to Matt for saying it, right?
And so, I mean, it's an interesting question to talk about, guys. Do you think not only does he deserve a shot, do you think that an NFL team will take a flyer on him despite the fact that he has baggage upon baggage upon baggage?
I think at this point, no, because remember in 2018, it was even considered a gamble for the Raiders, and everyone thought, because he was here at one point, it's kind of a Davis-y thing to do, because we all knew what Al did in the final years. Sometimes maybe Mark, we wonder if he kind of has that gene too, as you just alluded to, Chris. So even then, it was kind of a gamble, but I think people thought he's been in the TV booth for a while, he does, the quarterback camp, all that. Maybe even though the game has passed him by, maybe he stayed on top of it enough where he could at least try it out. And then once, it seemed like things maybe were going to click in 2019 because we thought he was going to invest in Carr finally. And then it just all went to hell, obviously, just this past year. So, and even in between those 2 years from 2019 to just this past year, he never really fully committed to Carr like we thought he was going to at one point. So it was just one of those things where even without outside of the Raiders, I thought it was thin. Now I think it's pretty slim. It's slim to none.
Should he? Absolutely
no,
not.
No.
Absolutely not. Will he? Possibly. And the reason why I say this, whether it be broadcasting or NFL coaching or high school, college, whatever it is, he will get another job in sports.
In the world of football somehow.
Because just think about this. People they want to say they have long memories, right? But in reality, people have kind of short memories. They rationalize it. They justify it. They say, oh, that was a long time ago. Whatever the case be. Urban Meyer, right? Yeah. The fact that he even got another shot, with the Jaguars.
Coach analyst is back and forth as he chooses, apparently.
If we're talking about low character guys, right? They're going to get another shot if they're a football mind. That's just the truth of it. It's the nature of the beast. It sucks, but.
I'd see him in actually on a sideline way before I see him in a broadcasting booth. Interestingly enough,
I believe that too.
And the only reason I say that because 100%, you brought up, and it's a good point. Go
100%.
Ahead.
Yeah. Ian and Brett, here's the thing though, right? And I'll push back a little bit as far as the football thing. And this is what a lot of people have been saying in the last 24 hours. he can't be in an NFL. He might get a shot at some small college somewhere to coach, but the NFL will never take him back for this reason alone. The comments he made regarding the LGBTQ community, regarding women, these comments are just so deplorable, right? And they are attributed right to him. It's not like it's somebody else said it and he just agreed with it. Or I mean, they're attributed right to John Gruden. There's no work environment in the NFL where you have he wouldn't be able to be in the building because there's so many employees. You're talking about hundreds of employees for all these NFL teams that have maybe a connection, maybe have a brother, a sister, a daughter.
It's a simple HR issue.
Who is a member of that thing. Of those communities, and you cannot have someone like that who's said such derogatory things, right? And has been and has said such deplorable things.
Any place of employment, any place of employment
it would be an absolutely horrendous situation.
No, so that's
the argument as to why John Gruden probably won't get a job in the NFL again. But to your guys' point about him as a
not
coach.
Not right now.
And him in football.
That's what I'm saying. There may be a
college team that takes a flyer
like
on him.
Like a seminar. He could do like a seminar or a camp or something that for recruits or prospects.
There may be a college team that takes a flyer on him as a coach. As an assistant. I don't necessarily know about a head coach because.
Maybe a coordinator at a smaller school. Even an FCS,
because
D2.
John Gruden, football coaching is in his blood, right, guys? I mean, the guy's a freaking freak when it comes to coaching. The guy stays up till 4 o'clock in the morning and then wakes up at 5:30 and then starts going again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, I mean, he is just the guy is just a cyborg when it comes to football. So, I mean, I could absolutely see maybe like a small college taking a flyer on him as an assistant, but I don't know if he's an individual with his type of characteristics that you want in a leadership, be the guy, right? So, to be the head coach and certainly not in the National Football League.
So Chris, it only takes one.
It does, absolutely.
It only takes one organization to turn a blind eye, and two, it only takes one coach to do something way more horrendous than he ever did.
It's going to be one, Ian, but it's not going to be like the Cleveland Browns or the Jaguars. No. It's going to be like Florida Atlantic or Florida Internet. You know what I mean? Or Coastal Carolina or something like that. It's not going to be an NFL franchise
Sun Belt school or something,
Like, you're not going to
So think about this. Think how quickly the whole thing with Stephen Ross, Miami tampering and stuff, it's out of the media. Do you hear anyone talking about it right now? No. It's completely gone.
Yeah, but
it's
no one,
it didn't even happen.
But there's no one above Stephen Ross.
No one has
to hire Stephen Ross. That's the thing.
No. But what I'm saying is that the media cycles tend to be pretty short.
I mean, we know this. We know this firsthand. We work in it. Yeah.
So it might not be now. It might be 5 years from now. It might be 10 years from now. But he will get another shot just because that's the nature of the beast.
I do think he may be at the very... When you say get a shot, that is interesting verbiage because I wouldn't be surprised if a team at least considered him because we see some of these teams considering... I mean, even guys off the street in terms of personnel, they'll give anybody a workout at this point. It doesn't mean they're going to make a move, but even consideration.
He won a Super Bowl. He may pop up. For a lot of teams that have never won a Super Bowl, that's enough.
Look at that on the resume. It screams.
You have that one accomplishment that will carry you for the rest of your career.
It does scream. So.
Jose V on the text line here on Facebook, talking about Alex Leatherwood, another Mike Mayock casualty. says, but we can allow women beaters back in the league. It's screwed up situation all the way around. Now, look, I'm not a big fan of these comparisons between players and head coaches, right? It's a big difference.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
People are trying to compare Deshaun Watson to John Gruden. Look, they're both bad situations, but let's be straight about it too. You're talking about John Gruden. He's the head coach. He's essentially the figurehead of the organization. Mm-hmm. He's someone who is in a leadership position. It's the reason I've worked in the service industry for a number of years, right? When you work at restaurants, you work at bars. Okay, it's the people who are executive vice presidents, the people who are managers, the people who are the general manager are held to a higher standard than the bartenders, the barbacks, the bussers, those people. It's a different kind of situation. When it comes to coaches, you have a lot more you have to answer to than a player, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not in any way excusing Deshaun Watson's actions at all, but he's a player in the league.
Yeah.
Right?
It always rolls downhill, doesn't it?
Yeah, and for example, he got signed by the Cleveland Browns, right? Yeah. There are a number of Cleveland Browns employees, I would expect, that are women that were absolutely not happy with the signing of Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. But it can get worked around a little bit because he's a player.
And it's just because.
And he's not a leader.
And it's because.
He's not like the general manager, for example. If he was a GM of the Browns, right? You'd never be able to do it. You'd never be able to hire that guy because it's a different kind of deal with when you're talking about John Gruden with the Raiders as opposed to like a Deshaun Watson. So I have a problem when people trying to make that comparison.
And talent's
different.
And talent's a lot more, just it's a lot harder to find.
No doubt.
You're gonna kind of sell your soul on a player before you do it on a coach.
And there's been we talk about notable this all the time, right? There's been a ton of examples of players that are bad people and that have done horrible things, and they get more of it. They get
we get a whole episode.
They get
a
second chances.
We have a whole episode.
They get
on
second
it.
Chances. Coaches, though, you do what John Gruden did.
Oh yeah.
You're not going to get another gig. So it's a different situation, and it's just a bad comparison, in my opinion.
Yep, well said.
Yeah. What do you think, Ian, about some of the trades that have gone down here in the last 24 hours? Look, 53 cut down on Tuesday, obviously. Mm-hmm. But what gets us fired up as NFL fans are seeing new guys in new places and having an opportunity that they didn't have at their previous organization.
Absolutely. For one, my team, the Eagles, they just traded for Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who, if you don't know, he was a big nickel for the safeties. He wanted to transition to a full-time safety role. He's going to get that with the Eagles. He's 24 years old. Definitely a splash move by the Eagles, and they got him for pretty much nothing. I think they flipped like a fifth for him that they got for J.J. Arcega-Whiteside,
who didn't even make the team.
He didn't
Seattle.
Even make the team for the team that we traded him to. Yep. So
and now you're free of Rieger. Like, the Eagles are just cutting the baggage.
And then we... to me, for the Eagles and Howie, this whole offseason has been a lot about making right. Because if you really look at a lot of the moves he made, and he's made a lot, probably more than any team in the league this year.
Yeah.
He's made a lot of them. If you look at the people that he's brought, a lot of them were connected to the Eagles pre-draft. And a lot of them been scouted. So I think a lot of this was correcting some of those draft picks that he whiffed on.
Yeah.
You know, I know they wanted AJ Brown. He went a little bit higher than they were able to. J-Jaw, they, you know, they wanted to kind of get rid of him.
It's like a full circle type of thing.
You know, Hassan Reddick, they really liked him, were linked to him. They didn't pick him. Even Kazir White, they were scouting out. And now they're saying that with Chauncey, that they would actually, they scouted him as a safety coming out of Florida. So, a lot of it's righting his wrongs, I believe. But you also have interesting cuts, right?
Yeah.
Because the Raiders cut Alex Leatherwood, which some people say not a surprise. I think it's still a surprise because it's kind of unprecedented for a 2021 draft pick, less than 2 years drafted in the top 20, to just been cut.
And shouldn't like, he like got cut better, like shot somebody or something like all the other first round draft picks
did? He should run somebody over and kill them or something.
Yeah,
and then
you just did it because you sucked.
To be cut just because
you
couldn't play the position. However, I also think that they were playing him out of position. I think that
they need to kick him inside.
Yeah, I think he's more equipped to be a guard than a tackle. Yep. And they kept on trying to make him a tackle, both on, like, they tried left tackle, they tried right tackle.
Yeah.
Like, I felt he was more of a guard, but they don't have a lot of depth on their offensive line. So they kind of like tried to treat him like a plug and play. I never felt like he was a plug and play. I thought they reached for him, but I don't think you don't cut second round picks that you picked last year.
Doesn't happen. You're right.
Like, you would have thought that. Apparently there's a report that came out. I forget who said it, but they said they called around trying to trade him.
Yeah.
And received, he said they received 32 no's, which I've never heard it phrased like that. Yeah. I thought it was kind of comical, but yeah, received 32 no's on a first round pick last year is weird to me. Yeah. That nobody would have bought for it, even if it is a fifth, sixth, something. Get some compensation for it. But the Bears picked him up. Kind of bailed out the Raiders because they're on hook for like $8 million dead cap money. And this, I think, frees up about five and a half-ish. Yep. So another surprise. And this is my last big surprise, was that Trey Sermon was released from the 49ers. Mm-hmm. And he's a third-round pick 2020 or 2021?
Yeah, just Ohio State. Because he transferred from Oklahoma.
So, so this is his third year. I thought that was a kind of surprising move because I thought in his limited time, yes, he was injured on and off, but I thought in his limited time, he looked good when he was on the court or field. So, I don't know. That kind of surprised me.
So, guys, a couple of quarterback scenarios that have played themselves out here in the last week or so. I don't think Ian and you and Jose got a chance to talk about this last week. Geno Smith wins a job in Seattle over Drew Lock there. And then, of course, Mike Tomlin, head coach in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Keeping it close to the vest, guys.
Hey, classic
not
Tomlin.
Coming out,
classic
not coming Tomlin. Out and saying who is, if it's going to be Mitch or Kenny at the quarterback position. What do you guys think about those two quarterback scenarios going down with the Seahawks and the Steelers?
As far as Seattle was ultimately, I guess, like in a way, the lesser of two evils in some kind of weird way. It's basically like Quan just said. It's like, he's like, you basically, does this happen because you just, you know, suck? Essentially, this was basically a matter of who sucked less. You know, I know when talking about NFL, it's still got to be nuanced because even the worst player on a 53 man roster,
these athletes are world class athletes. Yeah. Even if you're a practice squad, you're better than. Pretty much 99% of the world.
And
so.
If you follow college football, especially with some of the matchups, we're going to see some great ones, some marquee ones, but we're also going to see some, you know, really lopsided ones here in week one. You know, the gap in college football, if you watch that and then compare it to NFL, the 1 through 32 gap is not as big as people like to make it seem. Mm-hmm. But even so, it's pretty abysmal, as Chris alluded to earlier, in Seattle as far as that quarterback situation. It's a mess as far as either way. At one point, I'm sure Drew Lock will have reps. They'll go back and forth at some point this season. But as far as Pittsburgh, at some point, it's going to be Kenny Pickett. Mm-hmm. And I don't even necessarily think Mitchell Trubisky is going to even play that poorly and lose the job right off the bat. I just think at some point, it's going to line up where Pickett will get in, and it'll eventually sway that way. Because that's how it was initially with Los Angeles a couple years ago. It took a needle going, you know, into Tyrod Taylor in an awkward way, which led to Herbert, who's now looking like the next Dan Marino or like John Elway or something.
Sabotage. Right. That was straight sabotage. Well, they knew what they had in Herbert. They were like, all right, here's a painkiller to your ribs.
Yeah. So and that was like a scary story when it first came out. But absolutely. And you see what happened, and you're like, I hate to say it worked out for the better, but it did in a way. You know, like
they got to see a first look against NFL defenses really early with Herbert.
And I think that's kind of going to happen. Trubisky, I don't even think will necessarily be horrendous because, for one, he's just in a better situation than he pretty much ever was with Nagy in Chicago. I know Pittsburgh has a way to go from what they were, but Trubisky right now isn't that much worse. Probably is actually a little bit better than Ben Roethlisberger last year.
Oh, absolutely.
So there you go.
In my mind, no doubt.
And, so it's an upgrade either way.
The reason why is, I mean, I've been calling for Ben Roethlisberger's head for like 3 years because the guy can't.
It was
ever since his Tommy John surgery, he just could not push the ball past 15 yards. I made the joke always that he couldn't even hit his shoelaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and there's one time where it literally looked like he was aiming for his shoelaces. Trubisky is in a better spot, per se, but this is interesting because this is speculation, right? Because Tomlin has never really had to deal with this,
at least
in the public eye for us, ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's had Roethlisberger the entire year, or entire career, mm-hmm. right? So, it's very interesting dynamic. I feel like Trubisky is going to start only because Tomlin doesn't necessarily like mistakes, right? So I think that he wants Pickett. I don't think it's that he doesn't believe in Pickett. I think it's more of he wants Pickett to know the ins and outs of his playbook completely before he actually puts him against real NFL defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that come week six, it could be earlier, it could be later, depending on how Trubisky does, right? Yeah. But I want to say week 6 through 8, look for a change in quarterback if Trubisky is the actual quarterback to start. I wouldn't be surprised if this Pickett is in there by the second half of the season.
Straight Bet Sports coming your way live on a Wednesday, final day of August. Chris Wynn in along with Ian Bradford as well as Brett Lawson. Thanks for everybody chiming in on the line. We've got Donnell Goose Thomas always chiming in. Love it. He says I'll be there tonight. Aces win tonight. They play terrible and only lost by 3, guys. Thanks to Jose and also to Eddie Martinez chiming in also saying, Ian would talk about his Eagles first, of course. Of course, you got to talk about the E-A-G-L-E-S.
Hell of an offseason.
And they did.
I do like how you phrase that.
Jalen Hurts.
Righting wrongs.
Guys, Jalen Hurts is being hyped up. Rightfully so. Given what he was able to do last year as a dual threat quarterback.
Yes.
Right? And the numbers he was able to put up. This is a quarterback that I think is going to has a opportunity to bust out and be a big time player in this league. Ian, this is Eagles squad that in that division where the Dallas Cowboys continuously get overjuiced left and right. A team that hasn't been relevant since 1995 when I was back in college. You know, they haven't been a team that in any NFL regular season and postseason that have been relevant since then. And they're getting juiced up. Nobody's really talking about the Giants, and rightfully so. And the Washington Commanders.
That's the quarterback situation.
Defensively, okay, yeah. But you know they have offensive issues there. Mm-hmm. This is a Philadelphia Eagles team that is poised, Brett, right?
Without question,
that could absolutely make some noise in the NFC.
They're one of the better rosters in the entire conference. They could be like a dark horse for at least a solid run where not even that long ago it seemed like they were kind of in the back of the pack. Yeah. What they were able to do throughout the spring was pretty impressive. Their rookies really shined in the preseason, which is what you like to see. On paper, it's there. So far to the eye, it's there. They're going to be dangerous. It's going to come down to Jalen Hurts, who I think at this point in time, as long as we know what he is as a quarterback, I think the expectations will kind of be catered to that. I know in Philly it's tough, whether the fan base and the local media, it is. But I think Jalen has enough of the intangibles where the people within the culture are going to invest in him. I think there's something about Jalen coming in and handling that situation the way he did in late 2020.
Yeah.
Right. And that big win against the Saints. The way he kind of handled that, I think that bought a lot of belief. And I think the ups and downs of last year kind of were the humble stages. And now here he is poised to at least have an opportunity to break out and kind of change the conversation surrounding him as a whole.
So I've thought about this a lot. Yeah. Obviously, I'm an Eagles fan. Is my team. I try not to homer too much, but I do look at it objectively, right? So Hurts is a solid starting quarterback as is, right? I don't think the pressure's on him. And you mentioned the intangibles. The whole team is behind him. The coaches are behind him. One of the highest character individuals I have ever seen. You watch interviews with him. He has a master's in communication. It shows. And I really like him as a person.
Yeah. He's a great dude.
Yeah.
But from what we can see from our perspective.
And
yeah.
Personally, people are down on him, but like, even in college, he showed a lot of talent. It just was raw talent, right? Like, if any other pocket passer, right, had at least close to the intangibles of Jalen Hurts.
And like the resume, appearances, yeah.
I don't think this would be such a big deal. Also, Philly media is rough. I get that. But I actually place a lot more pressure on Jonathan Gannon. And this is the reason. Most of the additions outside of A.J. Brown, right, have all been on defense. Howie has put together a team where it's, Jonathan, you said that you have a multiple schemes last season, but it's heavy personnel. Well, I'm going to get you that personnel. We'll see. Interesting enough, Vic Fangio has been to an eye-popping number, like he has attended an eye-popping number of Eagles practices this offseason. Even in Miami, he even traveled to Miami to watch those joint practices and was talking to the Eagles. I have a feeling that there's a possibility, because the Eagles do this all the time, where they secretly hire a consultant. I wouldn't be surprised if Vic Fangio is a consultant. And whether or not Gannon does great, because if he does great, he's going to be a consideration for a head coach. If he does poorly, he's also gone, because there's a lot of other defensive coordinators that are proven in this league. So with the talent that they have, it's basically you either win us some games or you're out.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot more pressure on Gannon than Hurts. Now, if Hurts regresses, that's a different story. But I think if he just stays the same and Gannon progresses, then they can easily make some noise.
It's not as much of a make or break type of situation for Hurts just because he's a little bit more rooted. It's a lot more volatile on the defensive side because now the talent is there. At least you think it's going to be. So now you have to put in the right position.
Let's talk about your Lions a little bit. Yeah. What have you seen in the preseason that maybe has surprised you or excited you about the season? And what are your actual reasonable expectations for them?
For the Lions, definitely defensively, they're going to be an improved football team. And getting back Jeff Okuda off the injury, obviously our number three overall pick from a year ago, he basically played 5 seconds in his rookie year and then was hurt. And so he's going to be a big part of that defense. The acquisitions that they've made, particularly at the wide receiver position, also are going to be extremely beneficial. Amon-Ra St. Brown, a guy that a lot of people have talked about, not even in Detroit, just in the NFL, because of how effective he was as a possession receiver with this offense, has been kind of a focal point of Hard Knocks as well, too. And then, of course, it's Dan Campbell as the head coach, right? Yeah. And you have certain types of head coaches, guys, right, in the NFL. You got the cerebral, you know, breakdown X's and O's guys.
Yeah. You got the tape grinders.
You got the tape grinders like John Gruden, like who are a combination of tape grinding and being Chucky, you know, and being kind of wild
personalities.
Gentlemen, you have Dan Campbell, is the you're spot on. You know, I'm going to be flat out honest about you. A guy who's a football guy, former player, right? Not exactly. You're not going to tag him as the intellectual, cerebral guy. He is a rah-rah, get in your face. I'm going to motivate you in only ways that I know how, because I'm not a genius. I'm not somebody that is an X's and O's guy. I am an emotionally based guy. That's how I wear my heart on my sleeve, and that's the direction I'm going.
Where someone like you,
he's a very old school, like high school. You know how like old school high school coaches were?
Rah-rah.
Exactly.
And by the way,
let's all get in the bus. I'm going to have you guys spraying up a hill in the middle of the night type of guy.
Yeah. That's what he's going to do. He's made the comments. Yeah. We're going to rip your heart out. We're going to eat your children. Yeah. They didn't say that. I don't think that's nice. But the point being is that, you know, he's that type of guy. Right. That's the kind of mentality he has, and that's what the way he's rolling as a head coach.
And it's funny to see, because usually it's a coin flip with the players. They're either like a Mike Vrabel, really stone face, really quiet, like really reserved and kind of, in a way, kind of cerebral. He was played for Belichick. He's, you know, a tough Ohio kid, played at Ohio State. You know, they play a certain type of breed of football out there. That's kind of always been of Vrabel's DNA. So guys in that kind of, with that lineage, kind of stick to that. And then there's the Campbells, the guys who are going to be really extroverted, really out there, and just colorful characters. But at the same time, I love to see that. And there's two things that have stood out to me. And it's not just because they're featured on Hard Knocks this year, but it's interesting enough, even if they weren't, it's the first time where it seems like the Lions kind of seem like, at least in recent memory, passionate, and almost in a way, I know it's maybe not the best word to use, but cool. My buddy who I was watching an episode with, Aiden Hutchinson, having like a lifelong...
That was
phenomenal, the Billie Jean scene. Yeah. But Aiden Hutchinson having a lifelong dream of playing with the Lions, being his father being a great player at Ann Arbor, him being a legacy player for the Wolverines, him staying there his whole life and now being drafted there. It's kind of like, you know, for the longest time, the Cavs were a doormat, but LeBron kind of added an appeal because it's the local kid who dreams of playing for that team, even if that team is a perennial loser. You kind of have that. So even though it's much different in basketball and football with, you know, a guy like LeBron James can easily take a low-level team, as we saw him do, Aiden Hutchinson could be the best defensive end in football in a few years, unless the Lions get unless the Lions get that quarterback situation worked out, it's really not going to matter. But either way, the fact that you see a player like this, they're the number two overall draft pick, a stud in college, a possible stud in the NFL, who's so passionate to be there, along with a coach who's so passionate to be there, at least it makes the Lions seem like a cool brand in the immediate moment. And that actually is big, given how football is so big in the mainstream and how football is kind of just resonates with people. The Lions have never had that.
It definitely feels like they want to win, where before you're like, these guys don't have any passion. They don't have any heart. But I definitely think Aiden Hutchinson is an absolute culture fit there. I think he is the right pick there. I like Walker. I like the other guys. I like their potential. I like all of the top four defensive ends that were picked.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do think that he was the best fit for Michigan, coming from Michigan. Yeah. And I feel like, when they hired Dan Campbell, they also gave him a little bit of say in, or a lot of say in, who he picks. Because a lot of the guys that you saw him pick, or the GM pick, kind of fit Dan Campbell's type of style, right? So I think that they're going to be a lot better this year. We also forget that a lot of the games, they only got blown out, what, 2-3 times?
Oh, there were some close games.
Most part, they were highly competitive, a lot more competitive than a lot of pundits gave them credit for last season. So I do think that that's going to translate in 2 or 3 more wins. I just don't, they might, I think their ceiling is 8 games. I think that's their ceiling, and I think it's a high ceiling.
Yeah.
But I think that's their absolute ultimate ceiling is 8 games.
And I've mentioned this numerous times, guys. The most bet, future bet in Vegas, which is time, and yeah. you have to contribute a little bit of this, obviously, to the Hard Knocks episodes going on, them being in the quote-unquote spotlight.
Yeah.
Detroit Lions over as far as wins in this season. So you do see that. But look, I'm a lifelong Lions fan. I've been following the Lions since the late 70s, early 80s, back when Gary Danielson was the quarterback
yep. and
Billy Sims was there. There's just a natural pessimism built in yeah. in us Detroit Lions fans. And I can absolutely see a scenario taking place where people, love to see Dan Campbell on the sidelines week in and week out. But I could still see it being a 6-11 team. I really could.
Right.
Despite the fact they do have pieces, guys. They have pieces. You like DeAndre Swift in the backfield. You like
he could be a stud.
You like the acquisition of DJ Chark at the wide receiver position for a quarterback that I don't think's terrible. He's not the worst quarterback in the league, obviously.
Hawkinson has the makings of a solid tight end.
Yeah. And you guys brought up Aiden Hutchinson. This is my comment on Aiden. I would love if Aiden Hutchinson turned out to be the next Jared Allen. I think that's kind of the guy that I view him to be in
pretty good call.
Maybe a better Jared Allen. Maybe
a little more athletic.
Yeah, Kansas City.
And look at Allen's production. I mean, he's going to be in the conversation for Hall of Fame for years to come, as he should be. He was outstanding. Mm-hmm. If Hutchinson could be a consistent threat off the edge like that, it's gotten to the point in football, edge rusher is a organizationally it's a position that changes organizations. Mm-hmm. That's what it's a do or die type of position. That's why we're going to see Will Anderson and the hype for him coming out of Bama this year being so huge. Like that makes or breaks organizations, and that could help them a lot.
So we got to start wrapping it up, but real quick, I just want to get your guys' opinion.
Mm-hmm.
NFC, AFC, we'll do it that way. What's your sleeper team going into the year and sleeper team?
I'd say, I know it's hard to say as a sleeper team because they had such a big offseason, at least from draft onward, but I'd probably say Philadelphia just because so much of the conversation, at least right before those moves, it was like the flip just switched. But so much of what Philadelphia is going to succeed on is the core nucleus that was already there, which is kind of showing that they've kind of been reloading from what they were a few years, not 5 years ago at this point, but we saw what Roseman was able to do in 2017, got a little shaky in the years between, as you mentioned, and they're amending that. I think Philadelphia, but also with the expectations not being too high, not being a Chargers, Rams, Buffalo Bills type of high either, that still kind of categorizes them for me as a sleeper.
My team, guys, is a true sleeper, and it's coming out of the NFC South, and that's the New Orleans Saints.
That's a good one, too.
Gotta love the, obviously, drafting the likes of Chris Olave, who I think can be a big-time player and much in the same vein, and get a lot of the hype that happened in Cincinnati last year, obviously, mm-hmm. with the wide receivers there. I'm telling you, this is a team that if Jameis Winston can just have more touchdown passes than interceptions this year and can kind of have kind of a, I don't even know if bounce back is the right way to describe it when you're talking about Jameis Winston, but if you can just kind of right the ship there and be and they get out of Alvin Kamara what they need to get out of him, and defensively they're able to kind of hold down the fort, I think New Orleans absolutely could be a sleeper.
And I'll give you one more that's probably a little bit more of a sleeper than Philadelphia. I'll say Indianapolis, just because the core pieces they have there are so good. They don't have a tough landscape in front of them. Both Indianapolis and Jacksonville could actually look. Indianapolis has kind of had some core pieces there. Jacksonville, I think, is going to look drastically improved. The AFC South could have two teams out of it that I think are battling that. It may be a more fun and more a tighter battle than a lot of people anticipate.
So, Brett's going AFC, though, you want to talk AFC?
Yeah. The AFC's loaded, too. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's funny that you say that, because before we get into you guys plugging your own socials and everything and us getting off air, real quick, tight ends actually are my sleeper team. I think that a lot of people saw the A.J. Brown move and they're just discounting them. But if you actually look at the way that the rookies that they picked have been performing, yes, Treylon Burks has some stamina issues and asthma issues. If he can work those out, and then you have Kyle Phillips, who I think is the absolute stud of a receiver, they have some talent there, and a lot of people are sleeping on the fact that they did pick up Austin Hooper. Now, Austin Hooper didn't live up to expectations in Cleveland. However, he was a very good
receiving
tight end for the Falcons. So there's a chance there that they could be a lot better than what the expectations are for them and could mess around and actually win that division. So, Chris Wynn, real quick, give us your socials, Brett, and Let's go.
Always great joining Straight Bet Sports with you guys, sir. Brett and Ian and Quan as well, too. You can find me at Christian Wynn on Twitter. Also follow me at Christian W. Wynn on Facebook and also CWynn77 over on Instagram and all over the airwaves when it comes to sports radio here in Las Vegas, from KDON to Fox Sports Radio here in town.
That you can find me on Twitter at Brett Lawson LV as well as Instagram. And similar to Chris, also do some, you know, freelance work, some contribution. Actually, that's where I first met Chris back in the interning days. But yeah, me as well. And also for a local digital network, radio and television online, Go Live Vegas. You can catch me there every Saturday night at 6 p.m. I also have some other projects with that network upcoming. So I'll keep you posted on that. And again, just keep the follow on Twitter, Brett Lawson LV, College Football Among Us. So I will be very active come this Saturday.
And as always, EnBede_sports, as well as Straight Bet Sports. Follow Gorilla Cross Radio. We're here every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Tune in every week. Guys, please, next time, chime in. We always appreciate calls. It makes the show go so quick, and we really love answering your questions. So please chime in, tune in, tweet, retweet, subscribe, notifications on, all that good stuff, and we will catch you next week. Later.